Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts Leslie M. Scott Jones and Clinton Johnston. Now, here's Leslie.
Well, good morning, Clinton.
Good morning, Leslie.
How are you?
I am fine. How are you?
You know, I think there needs to be an education system for driver's ed.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. What, for real.
What possibly could you mean, Leslie?
Because stuff falls from the sky and people, they freak out. They're like, oh my God, stuff is hitting my car. I don't know what to do.
Well,
do I stop?
Stuff fall from the sky.
Do I brake? Wait, I'm turning.
Stuff
right?
Should so stay
I need to...
in the sky.
Oh my God.
I think you're misunderstanding. You're misrepresenting. You're just not.
Oh, I am.
Getting. And it's not really misrepresenting. I just can't think of the word.
It's early on Sunday morning, people.
It is.
Welcome to Homegrown.
I'm here, but I left my vocabulary back in my apartment, apparently.
You know, it's always the last place you look.
It is always the last place I look. Where are my keys? I think they're... Where's my vocabulary? Words. Words. Words.
No, it's like, you know, it starts raining and all of a sudden people are like, I don't know how to make this turn anymore. Should I wait a little longer? I know there's no one turning in front of me, but I'll just sit here because stuff is hitting my windshield and the windshield wipers are distracting me. And yes, there are four people behind me trying to make the same turn, but they'll wait. No, no, I need you to move. I'm trying to be somewhere. I'm trying to be. I got places to be.
I imagine that part of the problem is that it's February, and they expect if there's stuff coming down and stuff on the ground, that it should be ice and snow. I think they've got their February reflexes on.
Oh, okay.
And they haven't quite caught up with the new reality
of global warming,
of the eternal spring, which we are now calling
our new normal,
the Virginia winter,
right? Right? We're fine through February. It's March we have to worry about.
Exactly. that last March snowstorm.
Yes, exactly.
Where the sky gods say, hey, what's all this snow doing here? Did we dump anything?
Right.
Well, just do the whole thing.
Do the whole thing.
Just
right,
do the whole thing.
Right now. Do we care where it goes? Nah. Yeah,
it's
so
50 tomorrow. Yeah, but you know how the budget goes. If we don't do it now, they won't give us enough snow next year.
That's right.
It's the bureaucracy of weather. That's what's really
it's the use it or lose it thing. Yeah. That's what. Wow, that applies to so much. Sorry, my brain just went in a completely different direction.
I have no idea what you're talking about. There.
You have no idea what I'm talking about?
Certainly not.
No.
I lost it a long time ago.
It's in the same place as your vocabulary. Go there and find it. Go forth, young man.
That would be the key to it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I guess we should turn to our first guest. Can we do that?
I guess we should.
Yes, let's do that.
Hitting Homegrown for the first time.
No, really? This is his first time?
Yeah. Yeah, this is his first time.
You asked me once before, but you never got back to me.
You know, we are remiss. That's horrible. It's horrible that this is Doug's first time here.
Actually, I believe today it's remiss these days.
Found your vocabulary, did you?
It was just delivered. Still don't know what word I was reaching for at the beginning of the show.
But you got that one.
But got that.
Okay. All right.
You guys have entirely too much fun for a Sunday morning.
You
just got to go there.
You know, all or nothing.
Are we doing that?
Well, I'm trying.
Okay.
We were talking, and I can't push buttons and talk at the same time.
Associate Professor of Playwriting from UVA, Doug Grissom. Doug, welcome to Homegrown.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. Thank you for being here. How are things going at UVA Theater?
They are wonderful. That's my official party line to say it's wonderful. But no, there we have a lot of stuff going on this year. I'm involved in too much of it, I'm afraid.
well, that's all of us, isn't it?
But it's been good.
You do. You guys are stacked. In fact, I think it's either next week or the week after we're going to be interviewing David about Love's a Bitch.
Yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So it's nice. We don't usually reach over into the round of the gown.
Well, please do, because we would love to come over and talk about all kinds of things.
Oh, there we go.
Here we are.
Got our Facebook live stream.
We're going live now.
Okay.
Sorry, it's a little messy this morning, y'all.
The kids, they don't listen to that radio thing.
That's
anymore.
Right.
I can't. Okay.
So tell us about the Making Noise Spears series, or specifically about what the music library has to do with short plays.
Well, Abby Flanagan, who's head of the music library, approached me about a year ago and asked if I'd be interested in staging some short plays in the music library. They have these events, Making Noise, that happen at various Fridays during the year. I don't think it's a regular basis, where they might bring a cellist in to play. I think they maybe have had poetry readings, perhaps even art installations. This happened on Friday afternoon at 6 o'clock. And she said, would you like to create some short plays for that space? She actually knew or had read of my work with Offstage Theater.
I was about to say, that type of environmental mm-hmm. theater, that type of in-space theater, that's right down your wheelhouse because
absolutely.
Of your history with Offstage.
Which was, you know, doing plays in non-theater spaces, like art gallery plays in art galleries, bar plays and bars, and those things. So she approached me wanting to know if Offstage would be interested. Offstage is sort of, or very dormant now, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I thought, this is a great opportunity for students at UVA, for my playwriting students to perhaps write some short pieces, and then we would, of course, use UVA students as actors. And so that's kind of how this ball got started. I assigned my playwriting class we went over to the music library one day. I said, look around, see what maybe attracts you or set some kind of inspiration in motion. And they all wrote plays. We picked four of them to do and a monologue. Four and a monologue.
So the only stricture they had was play set in the music library.
Right. And most of them were set specifically in the UVA Music Library. Mm-hmm. Although I said you don't have to necessarily have the play itself set there. One of the plays, there are these interesting pods, these music pods that you sit in to listen to music, and it kind of encloses you. Mm-hmm. And they look like eggs. So one of my students wrote a play about two eggs.
Well, all right.
And it's
awesome.
Pretty wonderful.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So the only direction they got was, here's the space, go.
Right.
And how long did they have to write them?
I gave them a week initially, and then the ones that I thought were promising, because some of them weren't really stageable for various reasons. So the ones I thought were promising, of course, I had them rewrite and work on some more. So they've gone through different drafts since then. The initial draft was done, you know, in a week, I would say.
So let me ask you this as an experienced playwright and experienced playwriting teacher. Mm-hmm. How long do you think it takes? Do you think that there's a minimum time that it takes to get a good play? Because sometimes people come to me and say, "Hey, could you read my play?" Mm-hmm. And I look over it and I read it. And I'm like, this needs much more time. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about, I'm thinking of putting it up. I want to go. It's like, no, this needs so mm-hmm. much more time and so much more work. And I'm mm-hmm. used to, at least the process that I've been involved with, I'm used to it taking a while, mm-hmm. like taking a year plus mm-hmm. before you put something on stage, which mm-hmm. doesn't seem to be what, I mean, so what do you think?
I think it depends, first of all, it depends on how long the play is. I mean, right. it's a full length, is it a one act, 10-minute play or whatever. I think you can... Every playwright has their own process in terms of how long it would take to do the first draft. Mm-hmm. Usually the first draft is never enough. So the writing the first draft might be fairly quick, you might write a full-length first draft in a couple of weeks. But the idea that it would be done then is crazy unless you're a genius.
Right.
And so rewriting can take however long it takes. Sometimes it takes several drafts. Usually it takes several drafts to really get it to where it's producible. But one of these pieces, I also had an exercise recently where we went to the music library and they wrote something while they were there, like wrote monologues while they were there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing one of those, which was wonderful. And so that was basically a first draft that we're doing. And she's done some editing and some additions and work on it, but very little. I mean, basically it's a first draft that we're doing. Now, it's a monologue. It's a 2-minute monologue. So that's... So it all depends on the length to a certain degree, too.
What's the length of these pieces?
They're all, we have 4 10-minute, I'm saying, but it could be 10 to 15, and then the monologue is a couple of minutes. We're looking for about an hour's worth of material. It might bleed a little bit over. We haven't gotten a real firm timing on them yet, but we're shooting for around an hour's worth of material.
So this is going to be performed on the 16th inside the music library.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you expecting, or what do you want the audience to get out of this experience?
We hope they'll have a good time and enjoy the fact that you're seeing theater happening among them. You know, the audience, we don't know how many people are going to show up for this, and that's going to depend on where they are in terms of watching the plays. But my idea
is... Yeah, I was wondering, are you going to move the audience around the library to different spots?
Yes. We're using the main floor of the music library, which is a wonderful space. But
it is a gorgeous space.
Yes, it really is. It's very unusual, and it's we're using different spaces in there, so they're going to be moving from place to place around there.
Oh, cool.
And... we're going to set up some seats perhaps, but for the most part, there's not going to be an audience space and a performer space.
Okay.
I'm fine with them just sort of saying, this is where the play happens. Walk around, you know, you can stand and get in a better position. There are these interesting columns that are in the middle of the space that make sight line issues from time to time, which has been really hard to work with when I'm blocking it. But, it's going to be very loose. I mean, what I hope the audience will enjoy is the fact that it is kind of loose theater. It's rough theater. It's very kind of down and dirty, getting back to the elements of just text and actors.
Right.
And hopefully they'll enjoy it. They're all comic pieces. There's nothing heavy in this group. So it should be a nice evening or nice afternoon, late afternoon.
So did you direct all of them?
Yes, I did.
What was it like? How much did you workshop them with people? I mean,
not very much. We had a very restrictive time of rehearsal. We only had like 4 days spread out over a couple of weeks in the music library where mm-hmm. that was closed and we could get in there to work. We're going to have a couple of pickup rehearsals this week away from the music library, but it's been a challenge. It was a challenge casting it because our students are so busy,
right?
And
right.
people that say, "Oh, I'd love to do it, but I don't have the time." So we've got a good, really good group of actors, which I'm pleased with. I wish we had more time to rehearse, but that's kind of common.
That's every single.
So I shouldn't complain about that because every director does anyway,
right?
But I think they're in good shape. We had good rehearsals the last couple of days, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens.
So are there any crossover actors between pieces?
Yes, there are a couple of people that are in two pieces. Usually, I'm trying to think of who. We have two actors, I think, that are in two pieces, but they're in short, small parts in one piece, and then bigger parts in the other.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
So with your history and your background with offstage,
mm-hmm.
were you certainly you're able to, but did you find yourself in the position of counseling your students, saying, okay, when you're writing for a specific space, here's something to take into account, here's something to think about, here are traps that you need to worry about?
Well, certainly In the initial setup, I didn't so much, but when the pieces that we worked further on, I certainly said, yeah, we can't do that. Essentially, there was one where the playwright had a character coming in with a can of gasoline, pours it over another character, and lights, not lights it on fire, but lights, you know, pulls a flame out.
Right.
Can't do that. And you said, well, maybe you
could imaginative, do it with, exciting, but yeah, illegal.
Maybe you could do it with water. No, we can't pour water all over this.
Right. Not in the, no, we can't yeah. pour water all
so
over the
we,
floor.
You know, she did some adaptations, which I think work better. Mm-hmm. And so we had some of those things, you know, you can't, in terms of staging, this is not going to work. And so we made those adjustments kind of after they wrote their initial thing, because a lot of times I find that being free to write anything you want can lead to a lot of really creative things. Right. And a lot of times you can find very imaginative solutions to the practicalities mm-hmm. that if you've written something that's not practical to do, it can be very exciting to try to find a theatrical solution to it.
Yeah, it's the question, is it better to write with strictures? Because like you said, sometimes structures can force you into interesting places, or mm-hmm. is it better to be able to have a clean slate where you can mm-hmm. really take off the shackles of your imagination?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I think they've done that.
It's such an interesting, not give and take, but it's such an interesting check and balance. Not check and balance. I see the vocabulary is
gone ahead. Again.
Who
it's
took the vocabulary?
I don't know.
For a while.
The fairies.
When you're
fairies.
Dealing with working with real spaces, mm-hmm. Because one, they can be so inspiring, mm-hmm. they can be so evocative. That's one of the reasons why you work with real spaces. But at the same time, when you work with these non-theater spaces, like you said, there are things that come in that say, oh, well, you can't do this. Mm-hmm. You can't do this. You can't do this because that might hurt this. Or you can't do this because we've mm-hmm. got this going on here. Da 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 da, which make it difficult and mm-hmm. sometimes frustrating.
But you know what's wonderful is that you're working with a full set from the first right. rehearsal.
How about that?
It really is. You think about that, because you're working in a normal process where you have rehearsal furniture, you have things taped down the floor, mm-hmm. and you kind of know what it's going to look like, but
right.
you don't really.
Uh-huh.
And this time it's like walking into a completely built and designed set the first day of rehearsal. And that is pretty great.
Let's do a drop.
Yes. We have a bill to pay?
And we have a bill to pay.
One bill.
One bill or two.
Just one.
We'll go through the motions that we're actually making the studio. They're making the radio station some money.
Well, Jeff, are we making this station money? Maybe that's a question. I've never asked that question. I don't know.
I don't think we want to get the answer to that question. Not until we get more sponsors. Hashtag sponsor this show.
Yes.
Oh, time for a drop. You listen to Homegrown. 20 minutes past the hour, you listen to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. We are here with Doug Grissom from the land of the ooh, the V, and the A. Mr. Jefferson's University. No matter what those people at William & Mary call themselves.
Oh, okay.
Oh, snap.
Well, you know, leave them alone. They're smarting a little bit because yeah. Tech beat that ass yesterday. Like, I mean, it was painful.
Really? That surprises
me. I didn't even watch it.
Because when I think of excellence in college sports, I so often go to William & Mary in my head.
No, seriously.
Big sports school, William & Mary.
No. No, Tech beat UVA yesterday.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I didn't even.
Of course I knew that, because I follow those games religiously.
I know you do. And I didn't even watch the game. Like, I just saw, like, the highlights and the final score, and I was like, that hurt. That's going to leave a mark.
That surprises me, because when I think of excellence in college sports, I frequently think of the University of Virginia. Big sports school, that UVA.
They're trying to be.
It's where the money is, baby.
Don't we know it? the rest
that's
of the,
what we should do.
The rest of the programs at the university, don't we?
we were so silly to have an art show. We should be doing a show. I know,
right?
We should be doing a sports show. Maybe we could do both.
You want to do both?
So did you, Doug, did you think of trading any of your actors?
Who's on the draft this year for you, Doug?
Nobody's in the trading block yet.
When Teresa was going for a show, did you guys have to fight for any of them?
That happens sometimes.
So how have the actors responded to the process and to these pieces?
I think they've had fun with it. They seem to be enjoying themselves. They've adapted well to the environment, and they seem to be very flexible in terms of knowing where the audience could be all around. But of course, we'll see on Friday, won't mm-hmm. we, how adaptable they are.
Yeah, but they're young. They don't know any better.
No, I know. Yeah. And they'll have fun. It should be a fun day.
Speaking of young, how have your playwrights dealt with seeing... So these are your playwriting students from last year, right?
They were in my class in the fall, and they're also... They're also my playwriting students this year in another class. Yes,
I imagine that for a bunch of them, this might be their first time having a piece of theirs produced.
Yes,
that in and of itself can be an experience and a trying experience because you write a piece and it's mm-hmm. yours, and then all of a sudden somebody else comes in.
It's not.
How have they responded to having a director come in? And...
Well, interesting that three out of the four have not been able to come to rehearsal yet. So we might not know until Friday. And one of my playwrights did, and you know, she had a great time. She had never seen one of her plays acted before. She's a very new writer. She hasn't actually written plays before she took my class, and so she thought it was wonderful. She was also very adaptable in things that weren't working. She was the one that had the play that somebody comes in with a gasoline
can.
And so she was great about adapting that and being very understanding and getting the fact that these things wouldn't work and some other things in the script needed to be adjusted, and she did a great job with that.
So that brings up a question. When was the first time something you wrote was produced?
Wow. It was back when I was a student at University of Tennessee in like the late 70s. And it was a piece that I had written, I guess, in a playwriting class. And then it was done as a little lab show mm-hmm. by students. And it was pretty thrilling to see
right?
that.
Mm-hmm. Like the first mm-hmm. time that happens, there's like something about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I remember having a conversation with Clinton the first time something I wrote was produced, oh, and no. we watched it together,
uh-huh.
and we were walking out, and he's like, "What do you think?" I'm like, "This is the best thing ever. I want this feeling every day of my life. This was awesome."
Well, you have these characters that are just on paper that are in your mind, and then to actually see real live people embodying them is pretty wonderful. Or it can be pretty horrible, depending on how they do it. But in general,
they messed it up.
In theory, and in, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So these playwrights are going to have a good time, I think.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very cool.
Well, this is such a wonderful opportunity for them. This is mm-hmm. this is really great. It was really nice that the music library was so open to something like mm-hmm. this.
Yeah, I'll give again special credit to Abby Flanagan, who's the music library head. It was really her idea, and she created all this. I should also say before I forget that it because it takes place at 6 o'clock on Friday in mm-hmm. the music library. We do like you to register beforehand. Would you go?
How would they register?
They go to the music library website. You can get that through UVA, and there's on their events menu, they would just register, and mm-hmm. there's no charge or anything. And we're not going to turn people away if they just show up, but we want them to register so we have some idea of how many people, because we, in terms of thinking about where the audience is going to be, well, how many people is going to be there.
Right.
We're hoping for around 40. Mm-hmm. But So if you forget to register, you can still come. But we would like you to register if you know you're going to come or you think you're going to come.
Yeah.
Cool. The Making Noise series from the Music Library at UVA. Welcome to the Music Library, an evening of short plays, February 16th. Go to the Music Library's website at UVA to register. Doug Grissom, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah. Great having you.
Thanks.
Awesome. Cool. Hey, let's do our list of things coming up.
We need to do a list. Yes, we have a list. There's so many. Look at all of the things.
It's
all of the things.
It's the thingy things.
It's the things. We must look at all the things. All right, currently running through February 23rd, local artist Aaron Eckhart's exhibit, The Back Room at Second Street Gallery. I didn't know this was Aaron's. Mm-hmm. Oh, I need to go see that. Through February 24th, Top Girls at Live Arts are currently running through April 8th. The Actors Renaissance Season at the American Shakespeare Center presents Tom Stoppard's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, Congreve's The Way of the World, John Marston's Antonio's Revenge, Hamlet, and Richard II by Shakespeare at the Blackfriars Playhouse in Stanton. Wow, that's a lot. That is a lot. That's a lot of stuff. UVA Spanish Theater Group presents the Argentinian play Las Putas de San Julian. Julian?
San Julian.
San Julian.
Putas de San Julian.
Ooh, ah, my God. An account of the Argentinian army's brutal repression of a rural workers' strike from 1920 to 1922. Well, that's kind of a letdown. I mean, the name is so pretty. And
they don't write happy Spanish theater.
Well, all right. Well, guess what? If you wanted to see a view from some broads, you missed out because it's sold out. You might want to call Ro, see if she can get you in at Four County, but it's sold out. All right? February 13th, UVA's Fralin Art Museum Director Matthew McClendon gives a lunchtime talk about current exhibition, A Painter's Hand, The Monotypes of Adolf Gottlieb at the Fralin. His parents didn't think about their name before they named it. Okay, anyway. February 16th, Third Friday's Improv Workshop at the V. Earl Dickinson Building at the Piedmont Virginia Community College. Also on the 16th, the Charlottesville Reading Series continues at the New Dominion Bookshop with poet and songwriter. Oh, really? You didn't put a pronunciation for that? Guillaume?
I did not have a pronunciation for that.
Okay, it's G-U-I-O-N. So I'm going to go with Guillaume. If I mispronounce your name, I'm sorry. Guillaume Pratt and writer Linda M. Ferreira. Uh-huh. Okay. 16th also, Contra Dance at the Front Porch Roots Music School. The 17th, Bob Friedman leads the writer's seminar, Publishing Options, Pros and Cons, looking at the advantages and disadvantages of self-publishing. Oh, I could speak on that for days. days.
And as Leslie thinks about that, let's talk about some of the musical things that are coming up this week. Today, Patrick and Aaron Owell lead an Irish jam session at Studio Ix at noon. The Jazz Rascals play upbeat Dixieland jazz at Fellini's at noon. The Cool Blue Quartet mixes classic jazz and originals at the Batesville Market at 1 p.m. Also today, Tyler Smilo at Wild Wolf Brewery at 2 p.m. Mojo Pie at Glasshouse Winery at 2 p.m. Open Mic and Potluck at the Front Porch Roots Music School.
And Potluck?
And Potluck, two great things that should go together more often.
Pie and Potluck? Well, yes, but...
Open Mic and Potluck, 6:30 p.m. at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Yee-haw. Tomorrow, Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar. February 13th, we're looking at the Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar. And you get your Cajun Punk on with Jolie Fee at Fellini's. February 14th, Jim Wave does his Valentine's Day dinner at the Space Lab with a menu by Blue Moon Diner. February 15th, Skip Haga and Company at Dirty Nelly's, Nick and Steve Pollock at Fellini's, Crew de Bayou at Glasshouse Winery, Esoir on the 15th. Stanton's Barbara Martin delivers classic jazz and blues at the Rockfish Valley Community Center Lounge on the 16th. Also on the 16th, the Blue Ridge Irish Music School's traditional ensemble plays the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Jazz Sextet, The Hard Modes, takes inspiration from classic video game themes at Fellini's. That's right. February 17th, the Charlottesville Symphony plays Brahms' Second Symphony at UVA's Old Cabell Hall. David Tewksbury Band is in the Anteroom. Lord Nelson is at Batesville Market. Maria DeHart is at the Space Lab.
Also on the 17th, get your 80s on with the Leg Warmers at the Jefferson Theater, and six UVA law students do the music of Guns N' Roses under the name Gunners N' Roses.
No.
Rapture.
No.
Kid you not.
No, they didn't do that.
Kid you not. Welcome to the jungle, baby.
Oh, no.
Also on the 17th, Madison County's Cashless Society plays rockabilly at the Whiskey Jar. Every Monday, of course, is the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Seafoot has the Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, their weekly open jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Where else? Also the Singer-Songwriter Night at the local. Every Tuesday, the traditional Irish session at the Teen Whistle Irish Pub. The Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Salas at the Bebedero. Every Wednesday, the Open Mic Night at Proenado Farm Brewery. Bam! Open Mic Night at Holly's Deli and Pub hosted by Josh Mayo. Bam! Jazz Collective Number 9 at Fellini's Number 9. Bam! Bachata Fusion at the Anteroom, presented by the Charlottesville Salsa Club. Bam! DG and Friends at the Bebedero. Bam! Bam! And the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's.
Phew! That's a lot of going. That's a lot of Wednesday, man.
Wednesday is your day.
Yes.
Every Thursday, our buddies Lua at the Bebedero.
Yeah.
And every Thursday.
Every Thursday.
John Durth! The John Durth Quintet holding it down at Miller's. Because that's where you hold it down at. Because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Durth. And those are just some of the artistic events in our wonderful artistic town.
My goodness.
Hi, this is Corey Bix from Victory Hall Opera. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local arts on 94.7 WPVC.
33 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned after the show for a previously aired episode of Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rick Moore. His guest is going to be Robin Jackson from the Civility School. I remember that episode. Did you miss it? You can catch it now. She's going to be talking about civility in the home and in the workplace and other such archaic things. Well,
yes.
No civility in my home. No civility in my workplace.
Well, that's because we're black, dear.
Oh. Is that it?
Like, that's just not something.
Is that it?
That's just not something we do. We're just kind of, we're kind of like in your face. All, like, that's, yeah, that's not.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
White homes must be so quiet.
I know. No, seriously, do you remember the first time you went over to, like, your white friend's house? And you were like.
When a white friend's? What?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, seriously. You go over to your white friend's house, you know, like for a sleepover, you know, they ask you to stay for dinner or whatever. And you're like, what do you mean we're all sitting around the table? We're not just going to like crowd in the living room and watch. Oh.
What?
All right.
Why
cool.
Hasn't your daddy threatened you yet?
Right? Like, nobody's yelling.
We've been here 15 minutes.
We've been here 15 minutes. Nobody's said, hey. You get that homework done yet? I'm telling you about you. Don't you come down here unless that homework done. I'm telling like,
why aren't,
there's
why
no.
Aren't, are, why aren't you on your mama's last nerve yet?
What?
I don't understand.
Boy.
How many nerves does she have?
That would be why.
Wow. That's just.
Yeah. See? But yes, the black experience is very different. In case y'all didn't know.
Brought to you by Stereotypes International. Stereotypes International. Making sure that you don't have to deal with real humans. When stereotypes will do.
Oh my goodness.
We got to get our sponsorships from somewhere.
We do. And we'll take them from anywhere.
That's who we're
going
to do.
That's where we're going, people. No, my mother would be so upset right now if she was hearing this. She'd be like, what? We sat down to dinner. I know, Mom. I know. Go with the joke, Ma.
Let's sit down and go with our next guest. Coming here all the way over the mountain from Staunton, Virginia. Layla Ophelia and Alyssa Fulton from Mary Baldwin University. How you doing, guys?
Hi, we're doing great.
Get closer to the mic.
Hello.
Really close. Kiss the mic.
There
you go. Welcome. Thank you for coming over the mountain.
No problem.
How was the drive over the mountain?
It was beautiful. Very good. Rainy.
Okay, so
get close. We even closer.
So we and I, she and I, had a very different drive.
I know.
Apparently,
that's because your car was the black car.
Right. Oh. Exactly.
your car was like, you want to take that turn now? I was just going in the first direction.
That's right. That's exactly why.
You don't want to go in front of that car.
No.
You turn that turn signal off.
Don't change lanes now.
You know your mama taught you better than that. Right? That car. Stereotypes International.
We need to start that business.
Bringing you fun stereotypes.
Oh no, that feeds very well into what we're about to talk about, because I'm sure Marie Antoinette had a lot of stereotypes about her.
Tell us about Marie Antoinette.
Yes.
Well, talking about stereotypes, I find it really interesting that she faced a lot of stereotypes being a woman. And they often ridiculed her for her fashion and her clothes and her shoes and all of the extravagant things that she partook. And I think there was a stereotype that she was quite frivolous.
Just to let our listeners know, the reason why we're talking about Marie Antoinette is because you guys are doing a play, Marie Antoinette, by David. How do you pronounce his last name?
Adjimi. Yeah.
David Adjimi's Marie Antoinette.
Yes. And in our production, we kind of focused on, there's that great line that everybody knows from Marie Antoinette, where she says,
yes.
Oh, let them eat cake.
Yes.
When asked what the peasants should eat because they were starving and didn't have bread.
Yes.
And so that was one stereotype that was not even something that she actually said.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we say it in our production, but historically, she never spoke those words. And so it's interesting, speaking of stereotypes, how she was stereotyped as being frivolous, and they attributed things to her that she never even said.
Mm.
Historically, did she say, well, so what if they don't have bread? It's not like they're going to chop our heads off or anything.
Yeah, exactly like that.
Yeah. That's exactly how she talked.
Nothing you should lose your head about.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because our version of Marie Antoinette is, it does use many of the more modern colloquialisms.
Uh-huh.
So when you go, you will hear some French, you will hear some verse, and you will also hear a lot of some cuss words you might hear, and just Marie talks like, you know, a girl you'd hear on the street.
So modern language, but set back.
But set in the 1700s, yes.
In 1700s France.
Yeah, I got a new kind of understanding or window into Marie Antoinette because I was reading the correspondence between Queen Charlotte of England and Marie Antoinette. And I was like, oh, like, cause you don't think, like, you think Marie Antoinette, but you don't ever really like put her in a context to like have like friends, or you don't think of her having like a regular life,
yeah.
Kinda. And when I was reading.
Or parties where she serves bread.
What? You know,
sorry,
us women have to be very careful of our carb intake. Right? So I was doing research for another project, and I was reading correspondence between these two queens, and it was just really enlightening. I'm like, oh, they were like regular people.
Yeah.
Like they were, because these letters, I mean, it was, they were really talking about like women's issues. They were like, you're like, I don't get no respect to either girl. Don't come over here to angling, it ain't no better, you know.
It is interesting because Marie had like the problems of she was 14 years old when she was shipped off to marry the king of France.
Right.
And so thinking of it in that context of a young girl thrust into this destiny. And so we definitely play with that in our production, that she had everyday concerns.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, what 14, I mean, really, think about it for just a second. What 14-year-old is ready to be married, number one, and what 14-year-old is ready to be queen of anything? Like, I mean, no wonder they categorized her as a brat. Mm-hmm. She was a teenage girl.
Yeah, but to be fair, she wasn't, you know, the teenage girl who's living in the, I don't know, suburbs outside of Minneapolis. I mean, she's...
True.
She's growing up a child of royalty. She had to expect that, you know, that whomever she was going to be shipped off to be with, it's not like she's going to be, you know, marrying a bread baker. I'm never going to let her.
You're never going to let that go.
Let that down.
Okay. No, I mean, but
she was part. I mean, the reason we have that legend is because of because she was part of a privileged class.
Yes.
That was out of touch with the suffering around them. Thank goodness that we live in a world and in a country where we don't have a ruling class of, say, millionaires.
Oh, yes.
Millionaires who are totally out of touch with the carnage.
Right.
It does not exist now.
No.
Not at all.
No, but it was interesting because, you know, Charlotte was several years older than her. And so it was just interesting to see, like, Charlotte's perspective of her. Like, oh, girl, you young.
So, Layla, you're playing Marie Antoinette. Talk. What has it been like to deal with this character?
For me, it has been fantastic to be able to explore a historical character, because often we play characters who are
made up, right? Yeah.
And for me, this.
Yeah. Do you find that easier or harder, or what is it? You know, talk about playing a historical character as opposed to a fictional character.
Definitely for me, I think it is harder in a good challenge type of way, because you want to pay homage to that person and respect that they were a real person. Mm-hmm. And I think that we as actors always should be respectful of stories and not approach them from bias. And it's so fun investigating Marie Antoinette specifically as a historical person. She was not the best of people. She was not the worst of people. Like, you spoke about privilege, and I think that's so fascinating because she was privileged. She was living in extravagance while peasants were starving.
Yeah.
And she was largely unconcerned until later in life when she was forced to be very concerned.
Yeah.
So for me, I think the challenge of playing the historical character is playing the truth of not making her nicer than she really was and not making her worse than she really was.
Right.
So I did read a lot of biographies and stuff, because I think it's so important to come back to the historical roots.
Right.
And as an actor, in terms of a character, that's really kind of what you want. Someone who's good, but not too good, and bad, but not too bad.
Yeah.
Because you get that richness of the character. Lisa, tell us about the Dauphin.
Okay, so I'm playing Louis Charles, who was the last Dauphin of France. It's a challenging role because I'm playing essentially an 11-year-old boy, and I am 23. But it's been a really wonderful experience. I have a great mom, Layla. And it's really a tragic role because Louis Charles did survive the revolution, and the revolutionaries took him into captivity and essentially tortured him.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, after Marie's execution. And basically attempted to make him more of a advocate for the revolution.
Oh, really?
And he unfortunately tragically died. I think he had tuberculosis, is what he eventually died of.
Aww.
But he is truly such a tragic character, just completely innocent casualty of the revolution. And I think really shows the flip side of the revolution, that yes, monarchy has its problems. Yes, there were many, many things that Marie did that were terrible and ignorant, but it did come at an expense.
Yeah. Hmm.
What challenges are you finding playing an 11-year-old boy?
a lot.
he says with a certain air.
Do I? I didn't mean to. I was just...
Well, it's interesting because obviously with Marie, you have this wonderful dialogue, but with the Dauphin, he doesn't really say that much. So a lot of it is finding what's not said, the significance of being in a scene with, you know, maybe not a whole lot of lines or vocal contributions, but still, contributing to that scene in a constructive way that doesn't, take the audience's attention away from the drama, from the message. And so that's been my main challenge. And I think the Dauphin is a good mouthpiece for both Marie and the revolution. He's not really part of, like, he's part of Marie's world, but he's sort of on the fence or an enigma because we really don't know that much about him. So he can sort of see both perspectives.
So how old was he when everything started going downhill?
He was 11.
And how old was he when he died?
The revolution actually started when he was probably about 9, and then when he passed away, he was 11. So.
Aw. Yeah. Poor baby.
So he spent much of his young adult life just running away from revolutionaries.
All right. Well, let's pay a bill.
All right.
I'm going to have to digest that for a minute.
Like a fine piece of cake. This is Homegrown. 49 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And this is Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. We're sitting here with Layla Ophelia and Lissa Fulton, all the way from Mary Baldwin University, where they are about to do David Adjimi's production of Marie Antoinette.
And if you want the real story about what goes on when the mics go off, y'all need to check out the live feed. I'm just saying.
Nothing goes on when the mics go off. The only thing that goes on when the mics go off is we talk about how coming up next is the is a previously aired episode of the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rowdy Rick Moore.
Rowdy Rick Moore?
You know Rick Throwdown.
He's going to have words with you about that.
He is.
Yeah, he's going to have words with you about that.
But not before he has words with his guest, Robin Jackson from the Civility School. You know, I should have listened to that episode.
You should have.
I should have paid more attention
to
that episode.
If you had paid more attention.
I would have learned about civility in the home and in the workplace and on the airwaves.
But once again, you're black.
Ah, there you go. Trips me up all the time.
Shucks.
So, turning back to Layla and Lissa. So, what period does the play cover? Does it actually cover the revolution? Does it take place before the revolution? I mean, what are we going to see in this film?
So, it basically spans the.
Get up to the mic.
Kiss the
hello,
mic.
Hello. So, it basically spans the entire period of. It starts when Marie is probably how old?
21.
So she is Queen of France. She's in the height of her popularity.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then it goes right up until her execution.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
It traverses from when she's 21 years old is where we begin, and then we end at her death when she was only 37. That is the time frame for it. So I think it begins 1775. Yeah.
76.
Oh, yes.
How familiar were you with this time period, with some 18th century French royalty, with all of this before going?
How familiar? Didn't we all study that, Clinton?
Exactly.
American education.
Yes, our lovely American education system.
Those were two of my favorite paragraphs in history.
Exactly.
When I was
you
in
had
school.
Paragraphs? I had like two sentences. I don't know what.
Went to school with white people. That's why. Yeah. This joke is just not done.
Goes on. I had actually had the privilege of reading a little book about Marie Antoinette when I was younger and being fascinated by her. It was nice to have that background because I know for some she's a household name, and for others they don't really know her time period. And it has been fun to explore things I didn't know about this time in France. We have all the costumes, the wigs, so we are exploring the physicality of that. And
are you guys going like full corset and everything?
Yeah, you know, like the foot in the back to tighten all the laces of the corset.
Lissa, why are you nodding? You're playing a boy. You don't have to get it.
Oh no. But in that time period, men wore staves too.
That is true.
Yeah.
Also, I'm playing sort of a liminal character at the beginning of the play who does wear a corset.
Oh.
And I get a dress and a wig.
Yeah. Corsets are fun, aren't they, ladies?
Talk about the corset, the dress, and the wig.
I love I love corsets. Like, I did a show. Oh God, I'm not going to say how many years ago. Where I played a corset maker, basically.
Wow.
And so, yeah.
Oh, I remember that show. That was great.
And great now show. I have purchased. If you want to purchase some, mm-hmm. You want to go to corsetstory.com. Mm-hmm. They're a company in England. Ooh. And they're steel boned. It's not that crappy like plastic stuff you get here. It's steel boned, and they're very reasonably priced.
So this is like noted. You grow like 3 inches when you put this on.
Yeah.
Your spine is like a yeah. so straight.
Yeah. Oh, and the girls just stand. The girls just
very French.
Yes. No more gravity worries over here.
It's actually interesting you bring up the corsets, because obviously they wore corsets in this time, but there's a really great line from the play where Marie says, "I dispensed with whalebone," and she has rid herself of her corset.
Mm.
So she is revolutionary in her fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun investigating Marie's personal revolution counterpuntal to the French Revolution.
Oh, yeah.
But one thing that I think I always associate with Marie Antoinette is the wigs.
Well,
and
yeah.
we have like 2 feet tall, 3 feet tall wigs. Yeah.
Wonderful creations from our art department.
Yes.
Martha Saunders.
Yeah, we partnered with Martha Saunders, and it was really a collaborative experience, because theater is collaboration. So we partnered with our art department, and I think that was so smart, because they took like white wigs, and then they put paper, like beautiful, like flying ships and bird cages and butterflies.
Yeah. Oh,
wow. So those are just a must see, are the wigs. And of course, we've got the corsets and the costumes. So,
well, Leo, yeah. listen, give our people the what, where, when that they can, where they can see this.
Okay. Opening night is the 14th, and we go until the 18th. The play starts at 7:30, doors open at 7. And on Sunday, we have a matinee performance at 2 o'clock when the doors open. Mm-hmm. 1:30, doors open.
Marie Antoinette and Mary Baldwin University, well worth the trip over the mountain. Layla, Alyssa, thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And hope to have you guys back on Homegrown sometime.
Yes.
Good gosh.
See, it was easy, right?
Yeah.
All right.
It was easy.
55 minutes past the hour. Now it is time.
It's time.
For Leslie's weekly rant.
Yes, I do. I would love some music under this rant. Clinton, music of your choice, my dear.
Oh, okay.
Something black. Okay. So, yes, it's Black History Month, everyone. If someone were to ask you to name the first African-American playwright, who would you think of? Would you say Pearl Clegg? Charles Fuller? Garland Anderson, Entesaki Shange, Lorraine Hansberry? You would be wrong. American education likes to uphold the myth that black history and therefore black excellence and experience began with Reconstruction. We have a few standouts that support that, such as Frederick Douglass, but the rest of us were uneducated, unworthy, and subhuman. So if we relied on the school books we were force-fed from kindergarten to senior year of high school, it would have us believing that before the Civil War, we had no part in building this country, including contributing to literature and art. William Wells Brown is the answer you should have come up with. He was born into slavery in 1814 in Kentucky, and at the age of 20, he began his attempts to escape. He succeeded and fled to Ohio, then Massachusetts, where he became a writer and abolitionist lecturer. In 1849, he moved with his two daughters to England, where he published his first novel and his first play. His freedom was purchased by an English couple in 1854, and he was able to return to the U.S. and continue speaking to abolitionist groups and to continue writing. He completed more than 9 literary works, including 4 plays, before he died. He trained himself. Hold on, let me just go back. Before this man died, he then trained himself in homeopathic medicine and opened a clinic in the south end of Boston. He died in Massachusetts at the age of 70. You may ask, What did he write about? All of his works were about the life of a slave or life after being enslaved. He wrote three memoirs, a history of enslaved people during the Revolutionary War entitled The Negro in the American Rebellion in 1867, and My Southern Home, his last memoir, published in 1880. The real tragedy is not the way Brown's life began or the hardship and unimaginable fear he must have experienced after escaping and having his freedom purchased, before having his freedom purchased. The real tragedy is that I, like others, have studied theater and literature for decades and I had never heard of him. The really horrifying tragedy is that I know for a fact that he's not the only black excellence that has been lost to our people to whom it would mean the most. White supremacy in philosophy, law, and in deed has stripped and tried to erase this amazingly talented and intelligent man's existence from the collective consciousness. Brown said, when asked about the truth of slavery, "Were I about to tell you the evils of slavery, to represent to you the slave in his lowest degradation, I should wish to take you one at a time and whisper it to you. Slavery has never been represented. Slavery can never be represented." He is one of the reasons that black history is not and should not be limited to 1 month of emphasis. Because we are black history, and we are living and breathing and creating it every day. And the resiliency that he embodied throughout his life, the strength, is the strength that we draw on every day. We are the beginning of the history of the world. And it's time that more of us started acting like it. And that's the Weekly Rant.
We'd like to thank our DS, Doug Grissom, Layla Ophelia, and Lissa Fulton. Any complaints about Homegrown should be taken to our attorneys at the firm of Tochterman, Overman, Munson, and Burke. Legal services Like a Song. Opening music from Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music was by Positive Collective. Coming up next, Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, Rick Moore. Robin Jackson from Civility School, Civility in the Home and Workplace. See you next week.